morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show any time of day or night thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. We are going to be talking about a film today that's actually airing on KNME TV tomorrow, called The Southwest, Are We Running the American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? And we have today, because the KSFR Fun Drive is still going on, some DVDs of the longer director's cut of this film that are available for a contribution of $50. So before we play the interview for you, I would like to introduce the great environmentalist Sam Hitt. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
How do you want to be introduced?
Oh, a part-time fanatic, full-time dreamer.
That sounds good. That sounds like a lot of our public radio listeners.
I'm afraid so. Let's hope they don't dream all morning and get together and write a check right now to KSFR.
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And what we're doing is, because we have not reached our goal yet, we often do reach the goal within about 10 or 12 days, and we're coming up to that point right now. We are still basically required by the necessities of our budget to ask you to support this station. It's listener-supported, which means that listeners actually call. They get on the telephone, they call 428-1393. But I wondered if you, Sam, wanted to call out a little bit to the environmental community, many of whom are on this show.
Well, you know, you do such a good job, Mary Charlotte, of ensuring that environmental issues get aired on KSFR. And for all those people who have been on the show, all those who have listened to the show and have been informed by the great speakers that have been on your show, Mary Charlotte, I think we all have an obligation to write a big fat check this morning, you know, before you get in your car and go off to work. And it's something that our community needs, and I strongly support.
What kind of work have you done in your long career?
Oh my God! Well, probably too much and too little at the same time. You know, we started out when I first got interested in forestry. It was Elk Mountain, just about 50 miles east of Santa Fe, just south of the Pecos Wilderness. It was about 25 years ago. They were going to cut down all the big trees, basically a huge clear cut in that wonderful high elevation spruce fir forest. So, you know, that started a huge long campaign, which involved a lot of consciousness raising, taking people up there on tours, appealing and litigating against the agencies and the timber companies. And we ultimately stopped that timber sale. And, you know, that area should be part of the Pecos Wilderness. It's not, unfortunately, but if more people make the effort to learn about these things, we can make these huge, huge leaps that we have to make to make our world a better place.
Well, that's the example you just gave is one of those many examples of a small group of committed people who don't really have power and money on their side actually getting something done.
Yes, well, that's, of course, how it always happens. It's a small group that has a moral purpose, that really sees a problem and sees a solution as something that's beyond the status quo, beyond what is considered possible given the current situation. So I know there's a lot of listeners out there right now who are very attuned to these kinds of social dynamics, and you know, this station cannot broadcast without your support. So I really urge everyone right now to write a check to KSFR.
428-1393 is the number. That's the way you do that. You can write a check. You can give a credit card or anything along those lines. You can walk cash money down to the Santa Fe Bacon Company, and it will, every penny of it, go right down to the station.
Hey, get a cup of coffee, too.
Get a cup of coffee and come say hello. We're going to, actually, so many people have done that over the years. I have an author on, or I've got somebody on, and somebody will just walk into the Bacon Company meet them, and all sorts of connections happen. I think that's one of the things about public radio, is that all sorts of connections happen. People hear about, you know, something that you might have been doing, or that you are doing, or that Wild Earth Guardians is doing. They show up, and the domino effect. People get to know each other. All sorts of new activities happen. That's what it's all about. 428-1393 is the number. We're going to go into the interview in just about 30 seconds. But before that, we want to let you know that this is a documentary about the Southwest, the American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? And it's all about water issues. And it's a kind of comprehensive look at water issues. Because it was made for public TV, it's just under an hour long. But there is an uncut director's version of it, which has been sent to me. I've got 10 copies of it, and anybody who makes a contribution right now during this hour of $50 will get a copy of that DVD sent to their house or their P.O. box, whatever you want, 428-1393, or from out of area for our wonderful new listeners in faraway places like Taos and Albuquerque and Rio Rancho and so on. They can call the toll-free number, which is 866-907-5737, 866-907-KSFR, and go do it. Do it now. We look forward to hearing from you. Let's get the phones ringing off the hook. I want all these DVDs cleaned out. They're good. It's worth it. Let's do it now, and let's go hear the interview. I'd like to introduce Jim Tebow. He is the writer, producer, and director of the documentary The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry?, which airs on KNME TV this Thursday, October 2nd at 9 o'clock. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
In your documentary, you focus on the Colorado River. Why is this river so crucial in meeting the water demands of the Southwest?
Well, I mean, it's the spine of the entire Southwest. I mean, it's the major water supply source for, you know, the entire Colorado River Basin. And it's now at the lowest level it's ever been recorded in 85 years.
So there's been a great deal of increase in demand from water users, but there's also been drought and increased global warming. And I was amazed to hear in the documentary that the river is 2% Fahrenheit warmer than it was 30 years ago. So how does this affect not only the amount of water in the river, but also how demand is allocated and administered?
Good question. The first response to your first part of your question, the health implications are profound. We don't know exactly what may be the end result of this temperature rise, but it could have direct effect on the health and well-being of everybody and every entity, every living creature within the drainage basin. We're concerned about what's going to happen in terms of, you know, what kind of effect it might have on health of the community, runoff. We all know that Southern California, for example, has all kinds of problems related to runoff, and I'm concerned that this temperature rise may have maybe have a direct effect on the health and well-being of everyone.
Is the actual level of the river visibly lower?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you go down to Lake Mead or you look at Lake Powell, and it has a big circle around it. I mean, it's very dramatic, very, very profound.
And there's not only the lower river, higher temperature, but there's also, and you touch on this in the program, a real interaction between the reduced amount of water in the river and pollution in the same river.
Absolutely. And we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And we also know that some of the communities that are in the basin, like, for example, our Native American community, has significant problems because of a lack of water. And they're getting water related diseases on the Navajo Indian Reservation. They've had outbreaks of all kinds of diseases because the kids don't have among children because of a lack of sanitation. And
so they're actually drinking contaminated drinking water.
Exactly. Yeah, and that is a third world condition in our own country. Well, this is the thing that's why I did this project, by the way. I had just previously done a documentary called Running Dry about the global water crises, and the American people really in a way, just don't look at the rest of the world in a rather abstract sort of way. And when I make the direct statement that every 15 seconds a child dies from a lack of water or water-related diseases in developing countries, people look at that in an abstract sort of way. They may have compassion. They may think that's horrible. But that's in Africa. That's in India. That has nothing to do with the United States. And so I produce this documentary in order to bring the whole issue home to everybody's front doorstep and say, we've got a problem right here in our own country and that we need to deal with it, and particularly among our indigenous people. And those of us who live in the Southwest, you're in New Mexico, you obviously have, there's big problems among health problems and issues among some of the Pueblos, and of course up north in Gallup and over into the Navajo Indian Reservation in Arizona, they have major health problems. So, you know, it's a third world condition in our own country in which we need to deal with.
Let's get back to the question of how demand on the river is allocated and administered. I mean, this is something that is just an incessant question in New Mexico, the question of the administration of water rights. How is it allocated? Who allocates it?
Well, it was allocated in the 1920s, which is one of the problems. The allocation in the 1920s, they made the allocation or established the allocation of water at a time when there was a high water flow, and of course we didn't have any kind of the population. This was still the Wild West, right? And we didn't have no one foresaw the major population growth in, for example, Las Vegas. And so all of a sudden they got 1,000 acre feet of water. Well, look at it now; they have a population of over 2 million people. Who foresaw the major population growth in Southern California or Phoenix, Arizona? So, I mean, the fact is that the allocation it's inadequate in terms of dealing with the water crises. A lot of people, though, however, up in Colorado or Utah have a problem of maybe reestablishing the allocation because they're afraid that suddenly it might affect their water and how much water they have. And so it's a big problem. It's a complicated problem. But in my mind, and I'm really a journalist who produces a documentary, but after I've completed it and looked at it from afar, it seems to me that we all need to come together and kind of come up with a whole new way of allocating the water.
And we'll get back to that water policy question in a moment. I found it really interesting that the big users of water, as you tell us in the film, are agriculture and the energy industry. Tell us more about the energy industry piece of it. Which sector or sectors of the energy industry are we talking about, and how do they use the water?
Every single energy, whether it be coal mining or nuclear power, obviously hydroelectric, I mean, are all connected with water. And one of the problems which we established in the documentary is the fact that Lake Mead is down so low that it's projected that in the future there may not be any, that Hoover Dam may not be generating any electricity.
Which is shocking.
I mean, the fact is, we look at it, we really get real close to it. We talk about our economy right now, and obviously we're right in the midst of all of this, the crises related to our economy. But can you imagine that all of a sudden we don't have any electricity coming out of Hoover Dam and maybe other dams? And this, think about it in terms of the fact that this is a breakdown in our entire system. And then you couple that with major population growth and an incredible drought that's occurring. This is a crisis of profound significance.
Now, does a dam, for example, a hydroelectric facility like the Hoover Dam, does it use a lot of water, or does it just harness the energy of water that's passing through it?
Well, I'm not an engineer, but it obviously requires a tremendous amount of water in order to be able to generate that electricity. I mean, it goes through that dam, and if there isn't water in Lake Mead, it's not going to function.
Well, I mean, I guess that what I'm getting at is this question of where is our water going? Because, I mean, 20% of it is used by individuals, residences, people taking showers and doing their dishes, but 80% of it is going to agriculture and to industry. And one wonders, for example, what is the energy industry doing, or what could they do to reduce water use?
Well, it's obviously we need to re-examine every aspect of our how the agricultural community works and how it, for example, and I'm digressing a little bit, but a question that comes up from time to time is water-intensive plants like alfalfa just absorbs water. So we need to really look at what kind of crops are we growing within the watershed that doesn't require as much water. And we also have to look at more water in terms of more efficiency in relationship to the energy community. And the fact that if we use less energy, we will be using less water. Conservation is really good economics, and we need to look at conservation in concert with our use of water and use of energy. Because if you save energy, you save water.
We are in the Santa Fe Baking Company listening to an interview with Jim Tebow, which I did yesterday, about a film that is airing tomorrow on KNME Public TV at 9 in the evening. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me to be able to talk to this journalist and really water activist for the Southwest. He did a previous program called Running Dry, which was about the worldwide global water situation, and now this, the American Southwest, are we running dry? What's your take on this, Sam Hitt?
Well, water's so critically important. It's, we're not going to continue our lifestyle here in the Southwest unless we come to grips with the water issue. The vast majority of the water, of course, is used by agriculture in the state. We have to make irrigation more efficient. We have to, of course, reduce water use in urban areas as well. But until we get a hold of the agricultural issue, as the speaker mentioned, the use of water for alfalfa is just a gigantic waste. It's 9 acre feet or more per acre of alfalfa. You know, that's just an enormous amount of water to raise enough crop to have 3 cuttings a year in the middle of the Rio Grande Valley. So I'm just so happy you're taking this issue on, and we're, you know, featuring this film in the here
on the Radio Cafe.
On the Radio Cafe, there we go.
428-1393 is the number. If you like hearing about water, if you feel that it's important to hear about water, it's sometimes tricky for people to make connections. The term connecting the dots has come to be used a lot in
right.
recent years. I never heard that for anything besides coloring books when I was small, but connecting the dots between what you hear on radio and your own actions. And so people will hear things on the radio about, for example, saving energy, and they will buy power strips and turn off their TVs and computers when they're not using them, or they'll buy this or that kind of light bulbs, or they will weather strip their windows, things that you can do as an individual, or they will get involved in certain organizations that they think are doing good work, or they will contribute to those organizations. But then there's this other connection that I'm asking you to make, namely the connection between you, the listener, and us, the radio station. 428-1393 is how you actually support the radio station. When you do that, we get to stay on the air, bringing you more documentaries about water, bringing you more thinkers, movers, shakers, dreamers, and wild people like Sam Hitt, the founder of the, I guess you would say, the organization formerly known as Forest Guardians.
Yes, formerly.
Now known as Wild Earth Guardians, which has sort of expanded out the focus. And we are expanding out our focus to you. We have a new transmitter this year, which reaches now just about from Albuquerque to Taos. And so we're asking our listeners just to call in, make a contribution to KSFR so that we can stay on the air, so that we can maintain that transmitter, and I can continue to sit here in the Santa Fe Baking Company drinking caffeinated beverages and bringing you the best work that I possibly can.
No, and I'd just like to say, for all the environmentalists out there, let's support Mary Charlotte in this wonderful call-in show. It's just, it's something I listen to every day. There's always something interesting. There's always something provocative. There's always something that has depth to it. Mary Charlotte always reads the books that from the authors that she interviews, which is so unusual on the radio today. So get out your checkbook and let's support Mary Charlotte and KSFR right now.
Thank you, thank you. Ring those phones off the hook. There's three phones. There's three volunteers. There's three people listening right now who have almost gotten ready to actually go to the phone and pick it up. You are one of them, 428-1393, or out of area, 866-907-5737. 866-907-KSFR.
Got a few thank yous.
Oh, goody.
Okay, Kevin Mertiz. Kevin,
thank you.
Thanks so much, Kevin. David Gronstalt.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Carol Norton. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Carol and, of Wild Earth Guardians.
Uh-huh. And Diane Karp.
Diane.
Yes,
what
Diane.
A gal. What Diane a gal. Is so generous. I can't even believe it. She was on the show yesterday. All of you have that generosity in your heart. Just please show it now for me. Do me the favor. Do the favor for Sam Hitt, for Dal Dearman, for all of us who could be in more lucrative careers if we chose to be. But who've chosen this, not for ourselves, but for the public service of doing it. Don't get me wrong, I love doing this work. But it's really for the listeners. 428-1393. We're going to go back to the interview right now with Jim Tebow. The film is The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? Let's hear it. And in just the first couple of minutes of this, score yourself a copy of the long director's cut of this film, which is more than what's going to be on KNME tomorrow night. 428-1393. I'm going to say it slowly. 428-1393.
Would a significant conversion to solar and wind energy reduce water use?
I'm sure it would. I mean, we need to look at wind and solar and other kinds of alternative energy sources. Maybe generating desalinization on the West Coast, which has profound environmental and energy implications. But the fact is that if we're able to solve the environmental problems, it would still leave the energy issues. And if we came up with alternative energy sources, desalinization may be more of an attractive option in terms of generating new water.
What are the environmental problems with desalinization?
Well, I mean, once you start disrupting the whole ecosystem along the coast, this has profound environmental considerations. And then when you generate desalinization, you get two things. You get clean drinking water, and at the same time, you create a lot of salt, and which is referred to as brine. And so we have to figure out what to do with this brine. And so these are environmental considerations that are really important.
I would think that salt is an industrial product that could be sold.
It could be. I mean, these are things that have to be looked at.
I mean, heck, we pay high prices for sea salt in the fancy grocery stores.
Well, maybe some entrepreneurial person could take a look at this whole possibility and create a whole industry in itself.
So let's talk about water policy. I mean, we were talking about this 1920s. We have a nearly 100-year-old water rights, water allocation system in the Southwest. And you point out in the film that there's not a national water policy. What would a national water policy look like?
Well, in my mind, it would bring everyone together. Right now, everybody operates on their own. Every state operates independently, except occasionally when they all come together. But there really is a necessity to look at the whole region as a totality, and for that matter, the whole country as a totality, and water as a major parameter within that totality. And what I'm referring to is even a national land use plan. Now, I spoke to Senator Bingaman when I interviewed him for the documentary. I spoke to Senator Salazar, and there's real resistance in putting together a national land use plan in concert with a national water policy because of property rights, because of private ownership and control of their water, of people who have groundwater and they want to control that groundwater.
And they say, well, why can't I drink the water out of my own well?
But, you know, the fact is that aquifers and groundwater transcend many, many miles and may transcend many ownerships and municipalities. And so consequently, we've got to look at our whole water situation as a totality. and re-examine it. I mean, I've spoken to landowners, even in New Mexico, who seem to understand that we have to take another look at everything that we're doing. Because of this, and because of the fact that we have so many users of water. We have the Native Americans. We have big municipalities. We have regions. One of the things that I talked about in the documentary is the groundwater depletion and aquifer depletion. And people going in and drilling in these areas, it depletes, it dewaters our streams and our rivers. So there's significant impact, the way we're functioning now, on our whole ecological system. So we have to go back and we have to look at the way we're doing things. And we can't really do that without a plan, without a policy. And so what it requires is that everybody sitting around and getting around the table and talking about these issues and coming to making decisions related to policy and allocation of water. I mean, again, going back to the allocation was established in the 1920s, which is completely archaic. What's the point? I mean, we have to deal with the reality now. And then, you know, we talk about it in concert with population growth. We just reached 300 million people in this country, and growth is occurring all over the American Southwest. And we know that by the middle of the century, we're going to have close to 400 million people in this country. And many of those, it's projected that many of these people are going to be in the American Southwest. So we're going to have new growth, new development. And then you take that in concert with this incredible global climate change and drought conditions. We are in a crisis. And we're not doing anything about it because, I mean, we're not able to function, make great decisions because we don't have policies and plans in place where we can make great decisions. And when we plan, we've got to plan in terms of preserving the ecological system. We've got to make decisions that does not compromise the integrity of the environment.
So we have the integrity of the environment on the one hand, and then we have the needs of individuals and industry on the other. Are those necessarily at odds with each other, especially under the conditions of climate change, population growth, and the growth in the Southwest?
I don't think so. In fact, we're talking about, I hate to use the word green because it's such a cliche today, but the fact is, it generates, you know, we will be generating jobs. We will be generating new technology, new industry because of the changes that will be occurring. It doesn't mean that people are going to lose their jobs. It's going to have an effect on the economy or our inability to generate electricity or generate new water sources. What it means is that we sit down and we talk about and allocate, you know, or establish priorities in order to be able to function in our society in a much more efficient way. It's like if you're in our own household. I mean, we have to know how much money we have in our bank account. We need to plan and buy groceries and things of that sort. It's the same thing on a regional basis. We have to plan accordingly. We have no plan.
Is there anybody who is actually working out, I mean, not that it's necessarily made its way yet into government policy, but are there thinkers or think tanks who have actually said, here's what a rational national or regional water policy would say? Here are the guidelines.
I'm not sure there has been. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. I've talked to an awful lot of people. To my knowledge, there hasn't been, you know, real serious discussions. I have had discussions, though, however, with people at Sandia National Laboratories, and they'd like to work with me on maybe rolling this thing out and coming up with a concept of how to implement a plan. The one of the things that I feel really strongly about, and it's very clear, hopefully, in the documentary, is the fact that, you know, the United States needs to establish a water strategy. Not only to deal with our problems on a domestic level, to be able to plan how we're going to be able to function in the American Southwest or the Southeast, or what's going to be, you know, dealing with aquifer and groundwater depletion, or dealing with the development of new infrastructure, all of these issues, which are profound. But the United States also needs to take the lead in dealing with the lack of water and sanitation in developing countries in the world. So, I mean, I think the fact is that we have a golden opportunity to take the leadership role in solving these problems. I don't think that we should be wringing our hands and saying, oh, my God, what are we going to do? I think we ought to seize the opportunity to solve the problem in the American Southwest and set an example not only to the United States, to the rest of this country, that we have the capabilities of solving the water crises in the American Southwest, dealing and helping and solving the problems of our own indigenous people, our own neighbors, our brothers and sisters in the Native American community. But we also can set an example of the entire world that the problems can be solved. We have the technology. We have the wherewithal. We have the spirit, really, I think, to be able to accomplish it. I think we can. But it's a matter of everybody coming together, private landowners, policymakers, decision makers, educators. We also need to be able to educate our children, too. I mean, this is a crisis, and our children need to be a part of this whole process, because they're not only because of the future leaders in the world or our country, but at the same time, they can also have an influence on their parents.
And we are listening to an interview that I conducted yesterday with Jim Tebow, who is the writer and producer of the film and director of the film The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry?, which can be yours for a contribution of $50. An anonymous person, just walked up to me here in the Santa Fe Bank Company, handed me a little bit of money, and I thank you very much to this anonymous donor.
You know, and I'm so inspired, Mary Charlotte, I'm going to write a check right now.
Yay!
The KSFR, and I'm taking out my pen right here in the cafe.
Yes, he is.
And here we go. And gee whiz, if I can do this, you know, a part-time fanatic, then you can do it too. Get out your pen, get out your checkbook, help support this community radio station now.
Well, you are also making it easy for us. First of all, we have probably some of the DVDs left. We've gotten some callers, but we would like some more. I'd like to clear out all these DVDs because, you know what? If we don't have, they very generously sent us 10, and if we don't get all those 10 out to you, then they're just going to be collecting dust. And this is too important an issue, the water issue, to be collecting dust on the shelf in KSFR. No, no. We want you to get them. Oh, yes. 428-1393, 428-1393. And Sam Hitt has made a very generous offer, which is?
Well, you know, I am a maniac gardener as well as a maniac environmentalist, and I will, if you write a check today for $150, I will come over to your garden and provide at least 1 hour of consultation free of charge for your contribution to KSFR. I have a garden that, you know, what I call it, is a garden that ate my life.
I thought you were supposed to eat the garden.
Yeah, well, we do eat the garden, but gosh, I'm into rock gardening, I'm into vegetable gardening, I'm into fruit gardening, I'm into herbaceous borders and shrubs, and, you know, you name it. I can improve your garden with a little bit of green knowledge. So help support this radio station. I will come over to your house and do garden consultation.
So for $150, you can both help KSFR and help this fund drive end, because although it's a wonderful time of the year where we get to know some of you and hear your comments and really have some interaction in the community, I think it's also true that both you and we would like it to be over as soon as possible. If everybody who is listening right now would call right now and make a contribution just simply within your means, whatever amount that you can, the fund drive would probably be over by the end of this hour. So let's do it, 428-1393. So you know all about xeriscaping and low or no water gardening.
Yeah, of course, you know. And thinking about it, I'll bring over some plants from my greenhouse we can put in your garden. These would be xeric plants, native plants in most cases. They'd be beautiful, long-lasting. In fact, if you want vegetable starch, I'll do that too at the appropriate time of year.
So, did you build your own greenhouse?
Well, I actually have two greenhouses, and I have a bunch of coal frames, and I do a lot of propagation, both from seed and cuttings and divisions. So I'm actually a succulent and cactus fanatic as well. So I start my cacti from seed, and I have a lot of unusual varieties that are perfectly hardy. If you like spiny things, I can help you out.
428-1393. The word fanatic has come up quite a bit during this conversation.
That's
it's great.
That's all my fault. You know, it's Let's see, Ed Abbey at the end of his life was asked, like I was asked this morning, what do you do? Well, I'm a part-time fanatic, you know. Not a full-time fanatic, that's a bit too boring, but a part-time fanatic I think is completely appropriate.
So, that's sort of like practicing agnostic.
Yes, I guess. Maybe I'll put that on my business card. That's good. I like that.
428-1393 is the number. We are hoping that the phones are ringing. We need the phones to be ringing in order for us to get through this fund drive. We have to do this fund drive in order for the radio to stay on the air. We have to have the radio staying on the air in order for you to be informed and entertained every morning, every afternoon, every evening, through the night with the BBC. It's all for you, the listener. So please just turn around and do your part. We do it all for you all year long. If this is just a one little moment where you can do it for us, it's quick, it's easy. Please go
to
your phone.
Let's just put this puppy to bed. Let's get this fundraising extravaganza over. Write that check this morning. And if you'd like to see something of my garden, you can go on my little weblog. It's just samhit.wordpress.com. And I make little notations every
now and then. H-I-T-T, by the way.
Yeah, H-I-T-T, all one word. So, you know, I wrote something on amaranth. I wrote something on fall perennials. I wrote something on, oh, my goodness, what was it? Sorrel, I think. You know, so there's lots of fun things. It's, you know, it's kind of like the New Age Garden Club. You know, we can go on the web and share our information. I don't believe we all have green thumbs or we all... Let's see, don't have green thumbs, but...
I know for sure that I don't.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that, but I know that everyone has a little bit of money in the bank, a little bit of money in their pocket, and what we need to do this morning is to support this radio station and support Mary Charlotte so we can continue to enliven our mornings with high energy and high intellectual content interviews like we're hearing this morning. So please, get out your checkbook and make a check to KSFR.
428-1393. And we're going to go back to the last segment of the interview right now. We will be right back. By the way, if you want to make a long-distance call, or if Santa Fe is a long-distance call for you, you can call us toll-free at 866-907-5737, 866-907-KSFR, or 428-1393. We'll be back in just a bit. I think one of the things, I mean, I've done a lot of programs on water here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and it's something that we talk about a great deal in our public media and in discussions of all kinds in Santa Fe. But one thing that I've noticed that's beginning to bug me a little bit is that what the outcome of the conversation always seems to be wash your car less, don't run your water while you're brushing your teeth and all that kind of stuff, which is fine and which is great. But let's say I reduce my water consumption in my house by 20%, which is a lot. I'm only and every single person in Santa Fe does that, and every tourist and every hotel in Santa Fe does that. We're still only taking the whole water use down 4% because we only use 20% of the water. It seems like if we were going to make a difference, the real difference would be in hammering public policy to have industry and agriculture use less water.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. The whole area of conservation and strategies and implementing strategies like reuse of water and so forth needs to be across the board.
Well, let's talk about that reuse. One of the things I really liked about the documentary is the images are great, and you see both the sort of crazy waste and you see images, but one of them is of recycled water being used in industrial and land and agricultural applications. Walk us through what the water cycle would look like if, let's say, a gallon of water were taken out of the Colorado River and used more than once. Who'd use it first? Who'd use it next? Where would that gallon of water go?
Well, hopefully the water wouldn't be taken out of the Colorado River. That's one of the things that I feel really strongly about, that we need to start recycling the water that we already have.
So which water is that?
Well, the water that's, for example, in Southern California. I mean, the fact is that we need to start, what water is available, we need to recycle it, reuse.
What's the source? Let's start with your first gallon of water. You're reusing water that came from what source in the first place?
Well, let's go back to the Colorado River. The water goes into the agricultural community. The agricultural community needs to be much more conservation conscious. If there is a period of time when they have an overabundance of water, or they can utilize that water and make it and provide it to the urban area. So there's a greater relationship between urban use and agricultural use. We need to be much more conscious of drip irrigation and all kinds of really significant conservation use in terms of our water within the agricultural community. Industry can completely recycle, and I think they're doing that in a great deal, to be able to start using, you know, recycling water within their own operation and using more non-potable uses of water. For example, I know that New Mexico, they have laws against people. You have to get a special permit to do rainwater harvesting, for example. But places where there is rain, I mean, you have what you call a monsoon season. I know in Arizona and so forth, to be able to collect that water and use it for non-potable uses within industry or within buildings and so forth. So, I mean, I think the fact is that we need to kind of think, we need to save every drop of water. Every drop of water needs to be saved and needs to be reused. We should not rely on new sources of water.
One of the things that is a little scary, and one hears people talking, saying the words, water is going to be the next oil, there are geopolitical potential conflicts over water. Do we see any of these happening already? Where do we see them? What are some of these potential conflicts?
Well, one major conflict was the fact that, I'm talking about an international level, the war between the Hezbollah and Israel last year, or a year ago, was over water. The fact is, we're now beginning to see major conflict over water. And, of course, we've had conflict over water in our own, the American Southwest, for years. People argue over water. But there was an example where actually a war broke out over water. The Hezbollah, they were taking water out of the Wazani, which is a spring coming out of Lebanon, and diverting it to villages down in southern Lebanon, and the Israelis were really upset about that because they felt that water belonged to them. And this was a few years ago, and they almost came to blows at that point. And if it wasn't for some cooler heads prevailing, there would have been a conflict. But the fact is, war finally broke out over that one issue. And there's going to hopefully these kinds of issues will not happen very often, but the potential is really there. So many rivers, what, over 250 rivers in the world run through two or more countries. And that creates real tension and upstream, downstream problems. I mean, upstream, downstream issues. Who's using the water and how they're using it upstream compared to downstream? These kind of realities creates geopolitical tension. And so that's why we really need to be very cognizant and very aware of the potential for conflict over water because of all of these ramifications. And that's a global issue. But let's look at Mexico and the relationship to the Mexico and the United States. I mean, we give Mexico the allocation. I think they go get over 1 million cubic feet of water as far as their allocation is concerned. But what happens if there's no water or there's lack of water? I mean, what kind of conflict could potentially occur between Mexico and the United States? And as occurs now, when they created the allocation, they did not look at the impact of water on their ecosystem in the delta. And consequently, the delta receives hardly any water, if at all. And it has completely altered or destroyed the ecosystem in the delta. So, I mean, these are implications, and they're geopolitical implications.
And as somebody says in your documentary, we could kind of live without electricity if we had to, but we certainly couldn't live without water.
Exactly. I mean, it's our lifeblood. It's our whole existence.
I mean, I was thinking when I was looking at images of the river, if you think of the river's health the way you think about human health, you have a human body, you have so much work that you can give in a day, and if you're asked to give more and more and more, you get sick, you get tired, you get exhausted, the system doesn't work anymore. And it's really the same for a river.
We have had uncontrolled development. We've got major development going on all throughout the entire southwest, and particularly along the river and in the watershed. And we've got St. George, Utah. We've got Las Vegas. We've got Southern California. We've got Phoenix. We've got Albuquerque and Rio Rancho. I mean, we've got all this growth going on, and it's all pulling on the river, all pulling on the river. Then we've got groundwater depletion and aquifer depletion. This is our environment. This is where we live. And you're right. I mean, it we're talking about the health and well-being of our community. And as Ed Markey, Chairman Markey, says in the documentary, Chairman of the House Alternative Energy and Global Warming Committee, said, you know, this the planet is sick, and there's no, you know, there's no place for a sick planet. We don't have the facilities to handle a sick planet. So we have to heal this planet. We have to heal our region. We've already altered the ecology in a very profound way. I don't think we can ever go back, but we need to take a look at where we are now and make sure it doesn't get any worse. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is implement the plans and policies to make it work. And we all have to come together as a community. Sure, we're going to have differences of opinion, and that's healthy, just like you might have between a husband and wife or sisters and brothers. But the fact is, we all have to come together as a community and make the decisions on how to do this. And our community includes the federal government, state, local governments, our city councils, our mayors, and community leaders, our churches, our everybody in the community, the body politic, all of the community has to come together to be able to work with this, to be able to solve this problem.
Jim Tebow is the writer, producer, and director of the documentary The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? And that program is going to air on KNME-TV on Thursday night of this week, October 2nd at 9 o'clock. You can also find out more by going to the website runningdry.org. Jim Tebow, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the KSFR Fun Drive, and this interview with Jim Tebow is about a film that is going to air on KNME Public TV Albuquerque tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, Thursday night. It can be yours. The long version of it can be yours for a contribution of $50. And somebody actually called and wanted the Sam Hitt Gardening Premium, which we have given away. Sam Hitt, thank you so much.
You bet, and let's do it again. I mean, let's get out there. I mean, think of gardening as a kind of safety net during hard times, just like supporting this station. Without this station, think of how harder the times could get. You know, we couldn't get that honest, in-depth reporting. We couldn't get people like Mary Charlotte to tell us what's happening in the larger world. So let's support this station. Let's support Mary Charlotte. Let's support this program. Let's get out our checkbooks and write a check immediately. For a premium of $150, I will come over to your house and tell you how to be the most fantastic gardener the world has ever seen.
as you are right now. Ladies and gentlemen, he's actually giving away one more hour of gardening consultation, which is extremely generous. So get to your phones and give us a call, 428-1393, 428-1393, and make that call right now. You can get stuff, but most importantly, you get Santa Fe Public Radio.
Yeah, and if you get this premium, again, I will bring over some of my precious little plants, little seed-grown cacti, little rock garden plants, little alpines. I go up to southeastern Utah every year and collect seed, so we have a lot of strange things.
Strange things.
Yeah, yeah.
And phones are ringing.
Yay!
I have some thank yous.
Yes, go ahead.
Karen Tischer, thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Anthony, thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
Nancy Ondov.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Nancy. And Henry Shuklin, who was on your show not too long ago.
Oh, Henry, wonderful novelist and poet.
Yes, and he's giving a poetry reading tonight at 5:30 at the Upaya Zen Center.
Excellent.
Thank you, Henry.
So, all that and much, much more on KSFR. Please keep the telephones ringing. Keep it going because we are going to be done with the pledge drive. Hey, Dal, how are we doing? Ah, the control room. The control room voice has vanished.
Well, you know, not only will I bring over a couple little spiny plants for your garden that will take our drought, take our conditions, but I'll bring over my favorite poem as well. I love poetry. Your last caller just kind of got me inspired in that direction. So,
really? You will bring over a poem?
I actually send out poems to about 100 people every Monday. I call it the Monday Poem. So if you'd like to be on my list, well...
I want to be on your list.
Well, contact Mary Charlotte. We'll get you on the list. But right now, let's think about...
Both of Sam's offers have gone.
Oh, my goodness.
Like lightning.
Like lightning. I was going to take one of them. Oh, well.
Okay, let's do it again.
Let's
do one more time.
One more.
Excellent.
So it's an hour of my gardening consulting. The man with the garden that ate his life. I'll help you make a garden that will also eat your life. And we can all be happy together.
428-1393. Sam Hitt is the founder of Forest Earth Guardians, now known as Wild Earth Guardians and Wild Watershed, and has made a tremendous service to the state of New Mexico and to KSFR right now. Thank you so much for being with us.
You bet, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Good Morning Jazz. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, I'd like to thank all our phone room volunteers, the people who have fed the phone room volunteers, the wonderful staff of KSFR, Dal Dearman, General Manager, Linda Highhill, who keeps it all going behind the scenes, to the many producers and other volunteers at KSFR, to Sam Hitt, and to you, our listener, 428-1393. If you haven't made your contribution yet, go for it. Do it now. We will be so grateful. The fund drive will be over soon. We can go back to our regular programming, of which we've got a whole lot scheduled right now. Lots of good stuff. So, KSFR, 428-1393, 1-866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. Hasta la vista. Ciao.